Welcome to this edition of Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson.
This woman was the kind of woman that a religious Jew would not be talking to. She was a social outcast. Of course, from the Jewish standpoint, she was very much a social outcast because she was a Samaritan. That was the first strike against her. But the second strike against her was that she was a woman.
Today on Back to Basics, Pastor Brian continues his study in the Gospel of John. Join us as Pastor Brian begins his teaching on John chapter 4, verses 1 through 26, in a message titled, Jesus and the Samaritan Woman. Now here's Pastor Brian.
All right, we are picking up in our study in John's Gospel, and we are in the fourth chapter. In chapter 3, verse 22, John had said that Jesus and his disciples had come out of Jerusalem into Judea and that they were baptizing. Now here in chapter 4, verse 1, John picks up the historical narrative. So he says, therefore, when the Lord knew that the Pharisees had heard that Jesus made and baptized more disciples than John, though Jesus himself did not baptize but his disciples, he left Judea and departed again to Galilee. But he needed to go through Samaria. So as we've been studying John's Gospel together and following the story, Jesus had gone up to Jerusalem. You remember some of the events that transpired there. He drove the money changers out of the temple, and he had a confrontation with some of the leaders, and then he had that intimate conversation with Nicodemus. And then we read that he left Jerusalem and went into Judea, but now he's leaving Judea and he's heading back up to Galilee, but he's passing through, it says, Samaria. He needed to go through Samaria. Samaria was once the capital of the northern kingdom of Israel. And it was approximately, or is approximately, 30 miles north of Jerusalem. The Samaritans were a mixed race of people, and they were generally looked down upon by the Jews. In 721 BC, the Assyrians had sacked the city of Samaria and that whole region there, the northern kingdom, and they had deported the majority of the population, leaving just a handful of Israelites in that region. Then what they did is they repopulated the area, bringing in a number of people from some of the other nations that they had conquered. And so these that they had repopulated the area with, intermarried with the Israelites, and their descendants are the ones who became known as the Samaritans. Now the Samaritans, they believed in the God of Israel, but they had sort of a slanted and a distorted picture of God. They only accepted the books of Moses as being inspired. They rejected the rest of what we would call the Old Testament. They only accepted the books of Moses, and they put their own twist on those books of Moses. They believed that the place of worship was not Jerusalem, but the place of worship was Mount Gerizim in that area. And so in 400 BC, they built a temple on Mount Gerizim. But it was in 128 BC that the Jews destroyed that temple. And so there had been this ongoing hostility, this animosity that just existed there between these two different groups of people. But notice that it says that Jesus needed to go through Samaria. Now it's interesting that it wasn't absolutely necessary to go through Samaria to get to Galilee. It was certainly the shortest route, but it wasn't the only way there. And there were Jews, the Orthodox in particular, who would not pass through the region. And so if they had to go up to Galilee, they would have taken a different route. Although it would have been a longer route, they would have taken it just because they didn't want to go through the region. They would have been defiled in their thinking. But of course, Jesus doesn't have any of those hang-ups or any of those weird ideas about that. He has no animosity toward the Samaritans. And so he goes through that region, but he needed to go there for a specific reason. And we're going to see what that reason was. There was a person there that Jesus was going to have an encounter with. And that's what we read about as we pick up in verse 5. And so we're going to read from verse 5 on through verse 26. And then we'll come back and look at some of the key points. So he came to a city of Samaria, which is called Sychar, near the plot of ground that Jacob gave to his son Joseph. Now Jacob's well was there. Jesus, therefore, being wearied from his journey, sat thus by the well. It was about the sixth hour. A woman of Samaria came to draw water. Jesus said to her, "Give me a drink." For his disciples had gone away into the city to buy food. Then the woman of Samaria said to him, "How is it that you, being a Jew, ask a drink from me, a Samaritan woman? For Jews have no dealings with Samaritans." Jesus answered and said to her, "If you knew the gift of God and who it is who says to you, 'Give me a drink,' you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water." The woman said to him, "Sir, you have nothing to draw with, and the well is deep. Where then do you get that living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob, who gave us the well and drank from it himself, as well as his sons and his livestock?" Jesus answered and said to her, "Whoever drinks of this water will thirst again. But whoever drinks of the water that I shall give him will never thirst. But the water that I shall give him will become in him a fountain of water springing up into everlasting life." The woman said to him, "Sir, give me this water, that I may not thirst nor come here to draw." And Jesus said to her, "Go, call your husband and come here." The woman answered and said, "I have no husband." Jesus said to her, "You have said well, 'I have no husband,' for you have had five husbands, and the one whom you now have is not your husband. In that you spoke truly." The woman said to him, "Sir, I perceive that you are a prophet. Our fathers worshipped on this mountain, and you Jews say that in Jerusalem is the place where one ought to worship." Jesus said to her, "Woman, believe me, the hour is coming when you will neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem worship the Father. You worship what you do not know. We know what we worship, for salvation is of the Jews. But the hour is coming, and now is, when the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and truth, for the Father is seeking such to worship him. God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship him in spirit and truth." The woman said to him, "I know that Messiah is coming, who is called Christ. When he comes, he will tell us all things." Jesus said to her, "I who speak to you am he." An amazing story of this encounter that Jesus has with this woman and this dialogue that they share together. It's interesting to note that this woman was the kind of woman that a religious Jew would not be talking to. She was a social outcast. Of course, from the Jewish standpoint, she was very much a social outcast because she was a Samaritan. That was the first strike against her. But the second strike against her was that she was a woman. The rabbis so despised women and so thought them incapable of receiving anything from the scriptures that they had declared better that the words of the law should be burned than delivered to women. That was the mentality of the rabbis at the time. They had a saying that each time a man prolongs conversation with a woman, he causes evil to himself and desists from the law, and in the end inherits Gehenna. So had Jesus been one of those stuffy Pharisee guys, he would never have for a moment stopped and had a conversation with this woman. But of course, as we've already mentioned, Jesus wasn't caught up in that. He wasn't in any way, shape, or form thinking in those terms. But she was indeed a social outcast, not only because of being a Samaritan and being a woman, but even among her own people, she was probably somewhat of an outcast. And that's the reason that she came to the well at this time of the day. You see, normally the women would come earlier in the day to draw water. And so many have speculated, and perhaps rightly so, that because of her reputation, there would have been a lot of gossip and a lot of disdain toward her. So she would have waited and come to the well at a time where she wouldn't experience those kinds of things. She certainly had failed miserably in her life, having been married 5 times at this point. So she was a social outcast. She was a failure in her personal life. She was an immoral woman. She was, at the time of this meeting with Jesus, no longer married, but now she was actually just living with a man. So she was a social outcast, but it's interesting that she was nominally religious. She had some sort of religious background, and she had some degree of understanding. And we see that as Jesus converses with her, she refers back to her people's religion and back to her understanding of that place where God ought to be worshiped and so on. So she was a social outcast. She was nominally religious. As you read through the story, it seems that she was also quite skeptical, and maybe even a bit sarcastic. Because as Jesus is speaking to her about the things that he would provide, her response is, "Where do you get this water?" And it was probably that sort of a tone. He's talking to her about this living water. Where do you get this? And are you greater than our father Jacob? And you know, it is so often the case that people who have been living a life of sin get to a point of sarcasm and skepticism, and just their whole outlook on everything is a very skeptical kind of an outlook. She was also no doubt empty and weary. That's an assumption, but I think it's a fair assumption based upon the life that she was living. She was a person who was empty, and again, I think it's a fair assumption. 5 marriages tells you something. Tells you that the woman was, there was some void in her life that she was seeking to fulfill, and her particular means of trying to fulfill it was through relationships. And so she had gone from one relationship to another, to another, to another, and she'd finally given up on marriage itself and just decided to live with this person. And so as we look at her, we see that she would have been empty and she would have been weary. But then we turn to Jesus and notice the things that Jesus says to her. The first thing he does is he requests from her a drink. Now, notice, immediately she's taken back by this. She says, "Why are you, a Jew, asking a drink from me, a Samaritan woman?" She evidently knew the Jewish perspective on Samaritans and women. And so she was shocked that Jesus would ask her anything, and specifically to ask her for a drink. But notice the Lord says to her in verse 10, if you knew the gift of God and who it is who is speaking to you, you would ask him and he would give you living water. I think it's interesting that Jesus speaks to her about the gift of God at this point. If you knew the gift of God. Oh, isn't it true when you think about people just in a general sense? Because this woman, I think she's fairly typical of many. And when you think about the masses of people who are as this woman was, who are miserable, who are empty, who are skeptical. Oh, if they only knew about the gift of God. Don't you know that God has a gift to offer? Don't you know that he has something that he wants to impart to you? And so Jesus, he seizes this moment and he begins to speak to her about the gift of God. And he speaks of living water. Now, living water was a way the Jews would describe water that was flowing, like in a river or in a spring or a stream. And the interesting thing about living water is it was required for purification. Now, you know, in those days they would store their water. They would either have a well or they would have a cistern. And the well would be supplied generally by a spring. But the cistern would be just this gigantic, well, just a big pool, really, that was hewn out of a rock that would collect water. But for purification, flowing water was necessary. So Jesus speaks of living water, and it probably had some hint toward the idea of purification, but Jesus is taking it deeper than that. And he's talking about living water as something that brings satisfaction not merely to your physical being, but it brings satisfaction beyond your physical being into the very depths of your soul. And so he actually gives a contrast between the living water and the water there in the well. He says in verse 13, whoever drinks of this water will thirst again, but whoever drinks of the water that I shall give him will never thirst. So this water, and I'm sure he made some sort of a gesture toward the well itself. This water, although at that moment referring to the physical water in the well, it has a reference beyond that. It's basically referring to anything and everything that people pursue in the hope of fulfillment. And what does Jesus say about it? He says, if you drink this, you will thirst again. See, all of the things that we go in pursuit of, they can only at best satisfy us temporarily. And quite often they don't even do that. Oh, we think that something's going to satisfy us. We think that, oh, if I could just get that thing, or if I could attain to that position, or if I could be with that person, or whatever we think. And we pursue it. And then finally, maybe we attain it. And we find the moment that we attain it that it did not do what we were thinking that it was going to do. We were thinking somehow that it was going to bring me total and complete satisfaction. Sometimes it doesn't bring any satisfaction at all. Sometimes it's very fleeting. It's just literally momentary. Sometimes it might bring something for a bit of a longer period. But in the end, ultimately, it is a temporary satisfaction. What are the things that people pursue, thinking that they're going to be satisfied? Well, people, of course, think that success and whatever chosen field or area. If I can just become successful, that is going to bring me satisfaction. But then, strangely enough, they attain an amount of success, and sometimes a great amount of success, and yet they find that there's still an emptiness. There's still a void there. Others pursue after riches, and they believe that if I could just be richer, if I just had more money. You know, Jesus said an interesting thing about riches. He used this term in describing riches. He said the deceitfulness of riches. That's the best way to understand riches. They're deceitful. They fool you. You see, riches have fooled so many people because so many people have had the mistaken notion that if I could just be rich, I would be happy. But there's that deception because people have become extremely wealthy in some cases and yet never attained to happiness. Some people are in pursuit of fame. And if I could only become famous. And the interesting thing is, it just doesn't seem that you can be famous enough. And once there's somebody else that's a little more famous, then you've gone from satisfaction and fulfillment into a state of depression. Some people are in pursuit of power. And they think that through gaining power, they're going to be satisfied. But all of these things and many others are represented under the heading of this water. If you drink of this water, Jesus said, you will thirst again. But then he spoke of the water that he would give, the living water, he says, that shall become a fountain of water springing up into everlasting life. So Jesus says, essentially, whatever this world has to offer will leave you unsatisfied. It will not fulfill you. It will not meet that deepest need in your heart. It can't possibly do it. He that drinks this water will thirst again. But the person who drinks the water that I give, Jesus talks about the water that he's going to give, and it's going to become this dynamic element in a person's life. And just like a spring that gushes forth, and of course, water and life are vitally connected to one another, aren't they? You know, one of the unique things about our planet is liquid water. Liquid water is absolutely essential for life. And you've seen that, of course, in observation. You see areas where they're well watered and they're lush and they're green and they're beautiful. And then you see areas that are not at all watered and they're dry and dusty and barren. And Jesus is talking about the water that he's going to give, which is representative of the Spirit of God. And he's promising that that is going to produce not only life for me, but it's going to spring forth and it's actually going to impact others as well. The life that Jesus gives is no tame and stagnant thing, but it's something dynamic. It's something that bursts forth. And as it bursts forth, it brings life to others.
For the month of July, Back to Basics Radio is offering a DVD and CD set titled Marriage Essentials by Pastor Brian and Cheryl Broderson. Join Brian and Cheryl in this hilarious yet deeply serious dialogue that is so much fun to watch. Whether you're married or single, there's much to gain from their experiences and insights as they profoundly apply the powerful Word of God to marriage. Learn how to encourage, esteem, and enjoy one another in marriage in this refreshingly real, painfully personal, yet powerfully practical message filled with freedom and grace. This also makes a great gift for a newlywed couple or a helpful resource for a marriage in trouble. It also makes an excellent tool for a marriage ministry. We encourage you to call us right now at 1-800-733-6443 or visit us online at backtobasicsradio.com. to order this DVD and CD set titled Marriage Essentials by Pastor Brian and Cheryl Broderson. And when you give a gift to Back to Basics, we'll send you the Marriage Essentials DVD and CD by Pastor Brian and Cheryl as our way to say thank you. We do appreciate your generous support of this ministry. We'd also like to remind you that all of our other resources are waiting for you at backtobasicsradio.com or by calling our request line at 1-800-733-6443. That's 1-800-733-6443. Our desire is to encourage you in your daily walk with God. We'll continue next time with more valuable insights from Pastor Brian as we study together in the Gospel of John. Back to Basics is the preaching and teaching ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.